Welcome to the Myodysplastic Syndromes edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the MDS community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're at ASH 2024 in San Diego, talking with Dr. Sangeeta Venugopal, Assistant Professor of Clinical Medicine at the University of Miami's Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center. Dr. Venugopal, who's originally from India, has specialized in myelodysplastic syndromes for the past 2 years. Her presentation focuses on the association of smoking, genetic mutations, and MDS. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
The subject of your presentation is on smoking. I'm wondering if you can give us an overview of why this is important.
So myelodysplastic syndromes are a group of blood cancers that can quickly progress to acute myeloid leukemia, which can impact the overall survival in an adverse manner. So we wanted to look at, because tobacco smoking is already shown to be an established risk factor in other solid cancers such as lung and oropharynx and GI. So we wanted to specifically look at if tobacco smoking has a role to play in the MDS disease progression. And what we did was we looked at the data set from the National MDS Natural History Study. This is the largest data set, prospective data set till date. And this study has enrolled about 1,898 patients thus far. And when we looked at smoking and non-smoking, about 979 patients of them were smokers, which makes about 52% of the cohort. And we specifically looked at the data, the disease-specific categories. We did observe that 52% of them had MDS and a large chunk of them had CCUS. Most of them were older males and they were heavy smokers. Within MDS, when we looked at if there was a difference between risk categorization between smokers and non-smokers, we did not observe any.
For our listeners, can you specify what CCUS is?
So CCUS is sort of a precursor event to myelodysplastic syndrome. CCUS is an acronym which expands to clonal cytopenia of undetermined significance. So with that, if someone carries a diagnosis of CCUS, that means that they have some blood count abnormalities in addition to mutations. So when those things occur together, then they are called as CCUS. So the important difference between those who have the CCUS and MDS is, in MDS, we have a definitive bone marrow morphological evidence of dysplasia in either of the cell lines involving either white blood cells or red blood cells or platelets. But in CCUS, they do not have the bone marrow morphology that is specific for MDS. So no bone marrow morphology specific for MDS, just count abnormalities and some mutations. They make up the category of CCUS. And it will not be too long when the CCUS will progress to MDS.
To
depends
MDS.
On the risk of whatever the risk, higher molecular risk mutations they have.
So before we go on, I'm wondering if you can give an overview of MDS. How prevalent is it and who is likely to develop the disease?
So MDS is, compared to lung cancer or breast cancer, this is not a very common disease. So this is a rare disease. Most people who get diagnosed are in their late 60s. So the median age of diagnosis is about 68 to 70. And one other thing, important thing to note is people who have been exposed to prior chemotherapy for an unrelated cancer, they are also at a higher risk for developing myelodysplastic syndromes.
And it can develop and it can appear much later than the chemo
correct.
Itself.
So
correct?
There is a latency period between the receipt of chemotherapy and the development of myelodysplastic syndrome or a higher risk CCUS.
And how prevalent is this disease? Or how rare is it, should I say?
About 4%, 4 per 100,000.
Well, that is quite rare. Is there any variation geographically, let's say, in the U.S. or internationally? Or is it the same across the board affecting all populations?
So we don't have the data for internationally what is the prevalence. We look at the SEER data set, which is the most common data set that we use for incidence and prevalence. And even SEER data set doesn't cover the entirety of the U.S., with the data set that we have available, so the incidence is about 4 per 100,000.
Got it. And in your presentation, you talked about smoking intensity and also pack years. Can you explain that concept, please?
So pack years is number of packs smoked per day times the number of years. So that's a pack year. And smoking intensity is standard CDC definitions, which is light, medium, and heavy. So if someone is called a light smoker, then they have their pack year history is less than 10. And in people who are heavy smokers, the pack year history is greater than 30. And the medium is who fall in between 11 and 29 pack years.
And you said that there were 1,898 patients enrolled in this particular study. Mm-hmm. Over what time period? Where was it conducted and how was it conducted?
That's a great question. This is the largest study till date for the natural history. And this is the participants were enrolled from over 200 plus NCI designated sites. It could be academic or community centers. But we do have a centralized review board who went through the diagnosis and bone marrow morphology and sequencing data to make sure that everything is properly annotated.
I see. And so you mentioned about individual mutation prevalence compared between smokers and non-smokers.
So we looked initially at the broader pathways that are involved in who has more amount of mutations in people who smoke or people who don't smoke. Then when we looked at it, we specifically looked at the pathways that is shown to be important in the pathogenesis of MDS. Among the pathways, what we found was people who smoke had mutations involving the chromatin modification and RNA splicing. So when we looked at the individual genes, then it was ASXL1, SF3B1, U2AF1, and ZRSR2.
The conclusion that you drew is that the longer you smoke, the higher the incidence of disease progression. And if you didn't smoke that long, you would be less likely for the disease to progress than somebody, let's say, who smoked 20 years or more.
Correct.
Right.
So, but you should also know that it's less likely, but compared to non-smokers, the people who have a shorter smoking history are still at a higher risk for disease progression than those who did not smoke.
Those who never smoked.
Correct.
What about those who smoked and quit years ago?
So that's a great question. So we did not look at reformed smokers. If we could go back and look at it, we want to know what is the time period from reformed smoking. Say, what is ASO 5 years from quitting smoking, 10 years from quitting smoking, 20 years from quitting smoking? When do you go back to the level that is completely non-smoking?
Over time, the prevalence of smokers in the United States has declined dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time where almost everybody, it seems, smoked. Now it's not so cool to smoke. So have you seen a comparative decline in the incidence of the disease?
That's a great question in the sense that because our patient population who carry the risk of MDS is in their sixth or seventh decades. So that was still 60 years ago.
Yeah.
So I don't think we would be able to get a difference between what is the contemporary data set. So this contemporary population has to age out in sixth or seventh decade to see what is the difference.
Right. Okay. So basically the damage is already done.
Correct.
What about vaping?
So we did not look at vaping. So the next analysis would be on vaping and secondhand smoking. So how people who live in the house of heavy smokers, does it really impact them?
Okay, well, physicians' role obviously is to treat diseases, but this also puts people like you in the position of having to convince patients to quit smoking.
Correct.
So, and a lot of these are, like you say, older men who for whom it may not be that easy to quit.
Yes. So whenever someone gets diagnosed with a cancer, the first question they ask is, what did I do? Why did it come? And we have to walk a fine line here because you cannot blame someone for getting cancer because most of the times it's a random event. But also I want to gently bring up the conversation. Maybe this is the time for you to adopt a healthy lifestyle. And quitting smoking would be the first step. And how can I help?
If you don't, then the patient
yes.
is not going to get better. It will
yes.
only get worse, right? Okay. So what are the steps you take to actually bring that patient to change his or her lifestyle?
First, we talk about the disease. And most of the time what they say is, doc, I smoked and I got it. And like, what am I going to gain? At least let me die happily. That's most of the conversation. That's how it goes. And then you talk to them about, hey, we have studies that show even if you stop smoking now, it could potentially make an impact in the disease progression. Now, we are treating you for MDS. I really don't want you to progress to AML, which is acute myeloid leukemia, which has a shorter lifespan. So smoking, even if it is for a few days, stopping smoking, even if it's for a few days, it helps.
Understood. Just going back to your career, what made you interested in this particular disease?
Well, I have a breadth of experience as a fellow. As a fellow, I was trained at Mount Sinai, New York, under Dr. Mascarenhas. So he's an expert in myelofibrosis, and that's also a very rare disease. And then I decided to do an additional fellowship at MD Anderson under the mentorship of Dr. Guillermo Garcia Manero, who's a world MDS expert. So I'm particularly interested in myelodysplastic syndromes and myeloproliferative neoplasms. Now at Sylvester Cancer Center, I work with Mikhail Sekaris, who's our division head, and he is a world expert in MDS.
What other diseases do you work with, if any?
I work with acute myeloid leukemia, myelofibrosis, and myelodysplastic syndromes.
Mm-hmm. Are there any therapies on the horizon for MDS?
We are very eagerly looking forward to the phase 3 results of the Verona study, which is evaluating the addition of venetoclax to standard of care in patients with higher risk myelodysplastic syndromes.
I see. Okay. Any other final thoughts?
The important takeaway that I want to give here is stop smoking. If you or your loved one carries a diagnosis of a precursor MDS or MDS.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Dr. Sangeeta Venugopal, Assistant Professor of Clinical Medicine at the University of Miami. This is Larry Luxner. Thank you for listening.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.